number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
You're going to have to do a little bit better than that, Miami-Toronto. Another overtime game in their NBA playoff series, and the Heat win tonight, forcing it going to game five, but it prevented Toronto from going up 3-1 in the series. But let's be honest here. This is the series that's as competitive on paper. It's competitive on the court. You know, you break all of this stuff down. There are really good matchups. But look at the way Cleveland is playing. Look at the way Cleveland has played in the playoffs. This is the most competitive series that most people don't really care about. It is not an eyeball-drawing series. Because I have yet to grab anything out of this that makes me think, oh, other than LeBron playing his former team, any other storyline that makes me think any of these teams coming out of this series, any of these two teams coming out of the series can beat Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals. But nevertheless, if you're looking for that fun, competitive series where the basketball may not be all that great, and there are times where this game was really, really, really sloppy, but you're still looking for a game that's going to be tight, fourth quarter, down to the wire. This is your series. I mean, they go into overtime almost every time they play. It is their games are really, really tight. But again, the winner of this, how well are they set up to play the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are going to sit back and watch this and rest up? Dwayne Wade was phenomenal. He had 30 points tonight. I mean, he has found, he continues to play at a high level as he gets older and older. He continues to carry this franchise. I mean, it's amazing what he's been doing. And again, it's fun, but you're going to have to do better. You're going to have to show me a little bit more to show me that there is a really, really good shot of either the Heat or the Raptors going and facing the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals and actually doing anything. But they will have Game 5, and that's coming up on Wednesday in Toronto, where I'm sure Dwayne Wade is going to get a lot of boos and a lot of negativity. But you know what? Dwayne Wade, yeah, I had a couple of days to think about this because I know the people went crazy for Wade because he was taking some shots during the Canadian national anthem. And that is disrespectful. I mean, it is. I understand where the Canadian fans are coming from. We would lose our mind as a country if a player had done that. Even if he was an American player that was playing for the Raptors, we would be very, very upset. We would lose our minds if Steve Nash, a Canadian, had done that during the American National Anthem. We wouldn't like it at all. So I understand where the Canadian fans are going to do something. But I'd like to call out the country of Canada and the city of Toronto. I would respond in kindness and pride. That's how I would do it. That's what I would encourage. If I was doing radio in Toronto and I was getting everybody fired up for Game 5 coming up on Wednesday, I would be advocating, look, don't boo. Don't boo. That is the knee-jerk response. Wade shouldn't have been taking shots during a national anthem of anybody, whether it's Canadian or the United States, or if they had played an international game. You don't do that. You're not supposed to do that. You know, and again, if somebody else had done that during the Star Spangled Banner, we'd be going crazy. So I can understand. But if you're Canada, respond in kind. I brought this up yesterday, and there were two suggestions. One, you could wildly cheer the Star Spangled Banner. You could return in kindness, showing tremendous respect for the American National Anthem to show in Canada, this is how we respond to other people's national anthem. Two, when the Canadian national anthem begins, have the entire crowd sing it along with whoever is performing it that night. Don't boo Wade. Don't get down to that level, that expected level. Say, hey, you know what? We're Canadians and we're proud of our country and we're proud of our national anthem and we are going to do it this way. It's happened before. It's happened before. I brought up the examples yesterday of the Boston Bruin fans. When the United States national anthem was booed in Montreal, the Canadian national anthem was wildly cheered in Boston when the series shifted back to Massachusetts. The Edmonton Oilers fans did that whole singing with the singer on the ice hoisting the microphone in the air and having the crowd. This was in 2006 in their playoff series against Anaheim. And if you watch that on YouTube, it'll give you goosebumps. It is a real moment of pride. And you have to respect that. If you're in Toronto and you go to the game, I would encourage you to act in that way, give them that kind of response. Don't boo Wade, because it's swimming in the mud, and don't do that. Don't turn this series into that. Respond in kindness, and I guarantee you, more people will pay attention to how you respond. If you do something really classy, I'm telling you, in this age of social media, you will shine bright. That'll get tweeted out. That'll get YouTube. That'll get everything. And it'll be a really wonderful moment. But don't boo Wade. I mean, he claims it wasn't he didn't disrespect. He didn't mean to disrespect. Yeah, but he did. I mean, don't shoot baskets. That's all you get. Speaking of disrespectful, and we're going to get to this later in the show tonight. The Washington Nationals beat the Detroit Tigers, and Bryce Harper was ejected in the game. Had some choice words for the umpire in that game. And afterwards, as the Nationals were celebrating a win, Harper went again and yelled at the umpire who had thrown him out earlier. And this was during the celebration of the Nationals. And I got to say, I was really disappointed. But I also know this. In the competitive heat of the moment, guys are prone to do this. Tiger Woods throws golf clubs, right? I mean, we've seen basketball players go crazy, lose their minds. Baseball players do the same things. Football players lose their cool, too. We've seen it happen. Even the most gentleman-like person is prone to things that we can later pick apart and attack. Do you remember when Peyton Manning threw that scoreboard operator under the bus in Denver? Remember that? And I mean, I like a lot of people said, gee, that's really a really dumb, passive aggressive way to sort of make a point. And that poor scoreboard operator in that town, he didn't have to go there and he did. It seemed really petty. Athletes are prone to do that because as competitors, they do get caught up in the heat of the moment and they do things that, they probably shouldn't do. I was disappointed in this standpoint. I really like Bryce Harper, and I think he is the most important player in Major League Baseball. Not just the best, but the most important. This is a guy that really the sport can latch onto and hoist up to get some new eyeballs to the sport. To sort of pick up a generation that seems to have lost interest in the national pastime. Bryce Harper makes the game fun. He is young. He's exciting to watch. You can't take your eyes off him, even when he's walking. He becomes not only the best player, but a very, very important player. He's what Steph Curry is doing to the NBA. When you see all the kids now wearing number 30 and embracing their generation's, NBA player, right? We've had people gravitated towards Jordan, people gravitated towards Kobe, people gravitated towards LeBron, and now there's a young generation that's latching on to Steph Curry. There is going to be Bryce Harper kids who want to be like Bryce Harper and want to emulate Bryce Harper and are gravitated to the sport because of him, and this was disappointing. Now, granted, again, you don't have to explain to me the competitive nature of guys and the heat of the moment of guys. I get that. But this wasn't his finest moment. This, especially to bring it back to the forefront after his ejection. Guys get ejected. They're supposed to cool off. It's supposed to be gone. It's a long season. Let it go. And Harper does this sort of verbal attack in which he curses at an umpire during the national celebration. It shows a couple of things. Don't be selfish. Enjoy your win. Let these things go. My God, you're 23. You're probably going to have a number of these kind of run-ins in the future. And don't make it about your ejection. Make it about your team's win. Because as the most important player in Major League Baseball, I'd like to see you. And again, no one can force this on you, and you can totally reject it. But I would love to see Bryce Harper embrace that role of being a real spokesman for baseball. We've seen guys that people say, hey, you're the spokesman for this sport. And they say, I don't want it. And Bryce Harper might be that guy. Look, I just want to play ball. I want to do things the way I want. I want to win games, and that's it. But if you're Bryce Harper and you have that opportunity at 23 to bring in young, he's good with kids. Kids love him. Embrace that and carry it with you and realize that these things are going to be scrutinized and you don't want to be in the news for this kind of stuff. Be in the news for the kind of stuff like giving that woman that jar of money, not for cursing out a ref the second time.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Tony D taking you through the night tonight. Our telephone number 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. All right, we're going to talk to, and by the way, I think this is one of the coolest names of anybody that we've ever gotten on the show. Vinny Vinzetta of CBS 5 in San Antonio. Is that not the coolest name? Thank God he works in television, because that's a great TV name.
That's the only Vinny, reason I booked him.
Vinny Vinzetta. How great is that? In San Antonio. He's going to talk about the Spurs as they gear up for Game 5 in this series against Oklahoma City. And listen, if you watched Game 4 on Sunday, the Thunder did everything right in the fourth quarter, right? Kevin Durant had 41 points, 17 of them in the final quarter. They moved the ball effectively. Russell Westbrook went, oh, yeah, I don't have to shoot all the time. I'm just kidding. I'm going to pass the ball, have 15 assists. All right, Steven Adams was effective. Obviously, Durant was effective. The ball movement from San Antonio was non-existent. They kept missing shots. Danny Green wasn't hitting any threes. Tim Duncan played 12 minutes, didn't do anything. But yet, I don't feel the Spurs are in any trouble at all in this series. I just think it's, you know, hey, look, the Thunder did what they had to do. This is a competitive series. The Thunder are the third best team in the Western Conference. The separation between them and San Antonio was not that much. And so, but the Thunder have won in San Antonio, albeit a messy end of that game, too. So, and if they get that game five on Tuesday night, then the series could be really interesting. But right now, I do not think the Spurs are in any trouble. But we'll ask Vinny about that. Vinny Vinzetta against CBS 5 in San Antonio. Tonight was a really great night for me sports-wise. I don't have a lot of rooting interest at this time. You know, the Celtics are kind of out of the playoffs, and, you know, Major League Baseball is still kind of going through its first month. NHL postseason, I pull for the Predators because that's where I live, and tonight they were in Game 6 against San Jose, and it's an elimination game for the Preds. They're down 3-2. They've got this Game 6 in Nashville, and I couldn't take it. I mean, listen, I love playoff hockey. I just don't get into it during the regular season. I just don't. It's just not my thing. I don't watch a lot of Predators games, you know, like on an average January, I might throw it on, but I'm not all that intense into it. I don't really care about Peter Laviolette switching up lines because so-and-so's struggling from the blue line. I don't care necessarily that much. But in the postseason, I'm as into it as the next guy. This is incredible. They went into overtime, and I'm thinking, here it is overtime. Anything can happen. The puck could go in any direction, and then your season comes to a crashing halt. It is one of the most intense sports situations that we have. Because an overtime in basketball is 5 minutes, so there's an ebb and flow to it, right? If you're in overtime in a game 7 in basketball, all right, you got to play through the 5 minutes, and you get to the final 30 seconds and see what happens. Maybe you're down 7, maybe you're up 7, maybe it's a tie game, whatever. In the NHL, they don't play like that. You know, you go into these overtimes, and hey, whoever scores, that's it. And if your back's against the wall, just don't let one through. And the Predators outshot the Sharks tonight 32-17 or 32-18. And they win and they go back to San Jose for game 7. I was in all the way. Loved it. I mean, loved it. I was flipping back and forth between that and the Warriors Blazers game in Portland where Steph Curry made his return in this pivotal game 4. And right now, they're kind of in a dogfight with a couple of minutes left. So Vinny Vinzetta will join us from CBS 5 in San Antonio, and we'll talk Spurs basketball with him. All right, Sam Bradford. I couldn't wait to get to this story tonight. Bradford finally has returned to work out with the Philadelphia Eagles. He reported into their facility after saying that he wouldn't. After pouting and pouting, the Eagles have drafted Carson Wentz. And I think Sam Bradford's reputation is toast because he misplayed. Him and his agent totally misplayed this. Bradford wanted the starting job or a starting job in the NFL hand-delivered on a silver platter because somehow he feels he should be one of those quarterbacks whose starting status should not be questioned by anybody. And Bradford basically, and through his agent, made that clear that he wanted that sort of status. Find me a team that needs a starter, and I will be their starter. Trade me to a team that needs a starter. I want to be that starter. Because while I'm here, you want Carson Wentz, and I really don't want to play ahead of a guy that was drafted number two overall in a city that's as volatile with the fan base as Philadelphia. I absolutely want a guarantee that I'm starting. Who in God's name gets that? Who, outside of Tom Brady, who's getting that? Right? There's quarterbacks that get it, but in the same time, when you are Sam Bradford, you can't call for that. I mean, Peyton Manning lost his starting job, for crying out loud. But this is where I wonder if this is the rebuilding process for Bradford to try to get back into some sort of situational good graces. Meaning, I'm getting paid a lot of money. Pouting and whining is not going to do me any good, especially in this sport and especially with this fan base. If they're not going to ship me anywhere and my role is to start until this kid's ready, well, I can do that and then go somewhere and utilize that to go somewhere else when the kid is ready to take over. I don't have to be here for that period of time. They can get rid of me and they may not bring me back after 2 years. They might let go of me at the end of the year. But when Carson Wentz is ready, then I need to be ready to take over my next quarterback job. So I was glad Bradford kind of reported to work, but I think his reputation is shot. I mean, he had Joe Theismann on a radio show saying that this guy's spoiled. And again, the message wasn't delivered clearly. Because if he's competitive and welcome the challenge, him and his agent didn't say so. They were disgruntled that the Eagles would actually want somebody else. But think of the situation Bradford is in. He is the hand-picked quarterback by a guy so despised by the organization that they purged almost any remnant of his tenure there. If you were a player that was brought in by Chip Kelly, you are out the door. You are with somebody else. There was a complete purge. I think it's him and one other player that were handpicked by Chip Kelly, still on the roster. So you're not coming in with really good marks. Look, this happens all the time in business. This happens all the time in radio where I work. You get a new management team that comes into a station. They've worked with certain people. They wouldn't mind seeing those certain people in positions that maybe involve your job. It happens in industry. It happens in front offices. It happens in all sorts of fields. Bradford didn't understand that he was a marked man anyway, regardless of how they felt about him. So he reports in to try to salvage a reputation of, I'm a competitor and I want to do this. Maybe the first thing you need to do in rebuilding the public relations is sit down with your agent and say, no more dopey comments about how I'm not ready to compete and how I don't welcome the challenge or how I'm nervous that the fan base is going to get on my case when I don't play well and they're going to demand that the rookie plays. I mean, this kid has been given a ton of money. Without the overall national scrutiny, he finally got a taste of it, and now he's got to turn his tune. Listen, Sam, that town is rough, and it's rough on quarterbacks. You win them over. Show everybody you win them over. But other than that, rebuild that reputation. All right, we'll talk Spurs next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime Yahoo Sports Radio, continuing to look at the NBA playoffs, and I'll have a Game 5 in San Antonio between the Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder, with that series evened up at two games apiece after the Thunder took Game 4 in Oklahoma City to even that up on Sunday. Vinny Vinzetta joins us from CBS 5 in San Antonio, covers the Spurs, who again had 67 wins this season, but now in a best of three against Oklahoma City. How are you, Vinny?
I'm great. Been a fun series so far, and what do they say? Whoever wins Game 5 the majority of the time, tied 2-2, goes on to win this thing. So can't wait for Tuesday night.
Yeah, let's talk about Game 4. If you were to pinpoint a couple of things that went wrong for San Antonio, especially in that fourth quarter, what would those be?
I think it was as simple as they missed shots. I mean, Manu Ginobili said as much. They got good open looks, just went cold, ice cold, didn't knock them down. And on the other side, the Thunder did. And I like what Coach Pop said, too, after the game, that his team got out-toughed, as he put it, in Game 4. And I think it came down to that. And for once, hey, Oklahoma City didn't fold in the fourth quarter. They actually closed one out.
If you were to judge this on a 1-5 scale in terms of how much trouble the Spurs are in this series, what does Game 4, where does that tip the scale?
I don't think they're in a whole lot of trouble. I mean, they still have home court, and you know, winning at Oklahoma City is a tough thing to do. But look, they went up there and did what they needed to do. They needed a split. They got it. Home court is still theirs. Win Game 5 at home, and you're back in a good place. So I'd say on a scale of 1-5, how much trouble are they in? I'd say maybe 1.5, 2, not much.
Yeah. I want to talk about Tim Duncan, because he played 12 minutes and he didn't have a bucket, and he is an elder statesman in the league, and eventually, pretty soon, he'll be out of this league. What is his role on this for the season and in these playoffs?
Well, it's a good, curious question. I mean, as usual, Coach Pop managed his minutes well in the regular season, but, you know, he's 40 years old. He's clearly not the same player that he was, but you heard R.C. Buford, who won Executive of the Year today, and Coach Pop and other players since Game 4 say, we still have full confidence in Timmy. Maybe he's not scoring as much, but he's still a great protector of the rim. So I don't think they need, you know, a stat sheet full of offensive production. They just need him to rebound. They need him to protect that rim, and they still believe that he can do that. But clearly he's not been logging the minutes that one might expect. But then again, LaMarcus Aldridge has been great so far in the postseason.
Vinny Vinzetta joins us, CBS 5 in San Antonio, Spurs and Thunder on Tuesday night, Game 5. You know, this is a team, as I said at the start, they won 67 games, and if it wasn't for the Warriors breaking the NBA record, this would be one of the most remarkable seasons that we've had. In terms of where how good this team is, what makes this team different than the other Spurs teams that have won championships and have had really good years?
This team just has a lot of moving parts. I mean, the bench is such a critical part of this team's success, and more often than not, they have been great. You know, about half the season, LaMarcus Aldridge would tell you in the regular season, he really wasn't fully in tune with what his role was, but really since the All-Star break and the later part of the regular season, he's figured it out, and he and Kawhi Leonard have been an amazing 1-2 punch. Tony Parker talks about how, you know, I may only get 5 shots a game now, and I understand that that's my role. It's not what it once was. But my point is, beyond LaMarcus and Kawhi Leonard, there's still a lot of stuff to work with. So on any given night, you can have people take over. I mean, I'm convinced that they have a number of bench players that could be starting elsewhere in the league. They're still a very, very deep team.
Greg Popovich, how does he do this year in and year out with the talent that he amasses? How does he keep his message fresh? How does he keep success going? They don't seem to have a year where things fall apart and they've got to just rebuild it. They continue to have excellence, and he continues to have a fresh voice. In an NBA where that is sort of being discouraged, how does he do that?
Well, the Spurs kind of run their operation like the Pentagon. You don't get a whole lot of information out of there.
I can only imagine.
But one thing that we've heard over the years, and I've heard a lot, and it makes a whole lot of sense to me, is they constantly look for guys that are over themselves. They're not looking for guys that are here for network endorsement deals and superstar status and all about me. I mean, Kawhi Leonard doesn't talk to anybody. LaMarcus Aldridge joked, too, that he didn't really ever talk to Kawhi. And they don't know much about each other, but they're looking for guys that are just in the team, buy into the word team. And they just have been remarkable. They've had remarkable success in finding those kind of guys. It's just a system that they have that R.C. Buford and Greg Popovich have worked to perfection.
What has worked in this series so far? What is something that, if I'm a Thunder fan, I don't have an answer for my team in response to San Antonio?
One thing that's worked well for the Spurs, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think that, the shooting, I mean, when they're shooting well and they're moving the ball well around the horn, around the perimeter, it really catches the Thunder off guard, who have been prone to a lot of defensive lapses this season. So when the Spurs are playing what they call Spurs basketball, moving the basketball and finding shooters, and those shooters are hitting shots, tough team to beat.
Vinny Vinzetta against CBS 5 in San Antonio. Vinny, when did this team, it was a big three for a long time, and they won titles. When did it start morphing into Kawhi Leonard's team? Or is that the way to describe this? Or when did Kawhi Leonard really take the forefront of this organization's team?
Well, when they beat Miami in the finals, and he was named the finals MVP, I think that was maybe the start of it. That was kind of his coming out party. But ever since then, winning back-to-back NBA Defensive Players of the Year before LaMarcus Aldridge came on board this year, it was clearly his team. And aren't they so good at that? The progression has gone from Tim's team to Manu to Tony to now Kawhi, and LaMarcus joins the mix. It's amazing how it's worked. But I think a couple of years ago, it clearly became Kawhi's team as the number one option. And, you know, they had to sort of help him learn to establish himself as the guy who takes the shot. And he's fully embraced that role now as the number one offensive weapon, along with maybe 1B and LaMarcus Aldridge.
I've been hearing about Tim Duncan and that when we get to the time where he's going to leave, the consensus seems to be he will do so quietly. He will probably send out a email or something on social media that says he's done, no big tour. Is that a reality, that in the end, when he decides to hang it up, it'll be at that moment and it won't be a Kobe-like year-long celebration of his career?
We've joked about that in the office. I don't think there's any chance it would be a Kobe-type celebration.
That's so not like him. I mean, it just doesn't seem to be him at all.
We joked that there'd be a press release where Tim's only statement is, thanks. That's just the way he is. That's the way they do business. And, you know, I mean, Tim does deserve everything special, absolutely. But who knows how they will handle when Tim does roll off into the sunset.
Let's go back to one of the other big three guys, Tony Parker. How well has he played in this series?
Well, in the last couple of games, great. He's found his shot in the last couple of games and learned to be more aggressive. And in game three, maybe it was game four, it's a wash now, but the Thunder were giving him that mid-range jumper, and he was taking it and hitting it. It was game three I'm talking about. So they've given him that shot, and he's been a lot more active on the attack. And when Tony is on the attack and he's attacking the paint, whether he gets to the rim at the paint or comes back out, it spreads the floor and opens up shooters. So he's been so much more aggressive and active in games three and four compared to the first couple. He's in a good place right now, too.
Who gets the defensive assignment on Steven Adams? Because he's been doing well. And I wonder if there's who has the job of shutting him down or trying to shut him down?
Boy, I mean, I think it's a team effort. Maybe you can get a guy off the bench, maybe like Boris Diaw. You know, LaMarcus will work on him. I mean, the Spurs don't have near as many trees as the Thunder do. But, yeah, Steven Adams has been a thorn in the side, and that's gonna be a full effort to slow him down. And not just his rebounding, but Russell Westbrook in game four did a much better job of involving him offensively and getting him looks very close at the rim. So, yeah, that's a good point by you. That's a great piece of the game to watch tomorrow night.
Vinny Vinzetta again, CBS 5 in San Antonio. It has been a great series and it continues to be. Vinny, thank you so much for your time tonight on the Inside on the Spurs.
My pleasure. Have a great night.
All right, coming up next, we're just about done with Golden State and Portland. That, not just the game, but that series, is Steph Curry has been fantastic. His return, we'll analyze it next. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, Steph Curry exploded in the fourth quarter in overtime as the Golden State Warriors beat poor Portland tonight in overtime. This is so bad for Portland. They raced out to this huge lead, and they had the crowd on their side, and Steph came out, and he was kind of cold, but yeah, I started getting some points, but he wasn't hitting any threes, and then he started hitting some threes, and then he started getting really hot, then he started getting really hot, then he basically just took over the game, and Portland's now down 3-1, and we can now say, thank you, Portland Trailblazers, for your participation in the playoffs. We appreciate your time. Good luck to you down the stretch as you continue to grow that very nice young team under Terry Stotts. But now it's over. Steph Curry came back, and everyone was wondering about rust, and it was there, but it didn't last. You know, it didn't take three games for Steph Curry to get back into his groove. It took about a half, and then it was off to the races. Boy, do these playoffs need him back. Boy, do these playoffs really need the MVP.
I selfishly want him to, like, not play the next game just and then win and get to the finals, the Western Conference Finals, and just protect himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Stay in a bubble, like,
we're in play. Yeah, like, we're in good shape now, right? We're up 3-1, and we're going home, and we'll probably win this demoralizing Portland team. But again, I mean, Portland raced out. It was like 20-5 at one point. I mean, it was crazy early in this game. And again, I know you can't run. I mean, that's like sprinting in a marathon. Eventually, you have to slow down and you have to pace yourself a little bit. But the Trailblazers race out to a lead. They're backed by the crowd. Things were going their way. It looked like there was one point Brian Anderson on the broadcast said there is something covering that basket for Golden State, because everything that they shot was bouncing off the rim, wasn't going in, off the backboard. I mean, they were just missing everything. But again, because, you know, it's a long game, it's 48 minutes, you got to pace yourself, and eventually teams go in streaks. Golden State came back in this game and started chipping away at the lead, and Curry just started getting warmed up and warmed up and warmed up, and before you know it, the threes were being knocked down, and he had pretty much like all of the points in the overtime frame. I mean, it was like crazy how many points he was scoring. But again, not that unexpected. He came in, he was off the bench, and he scored 40 points. He was 16 of 32. You know, that's 50%, but most of the night was cold. And then he was 5 of 16 from behind the arc. And again, I think at one point he was 0 for 9.
Yes, he was.
So that meant he went 5 for 7 to close out the game. That's heating up. And now we're at a position where I may have to backtrack a touch, because I said this, I've been saying this while Curry is out, because we don't know what this team is going to look like with Steph Curry, and how injured is he, and is he going to be hurt? Is he going to play at 80%? Is he going to be slightly off his normal game? The way Cleveland was playing, I started wondering, man, maybe this is the Cavaliers' year. Maybe they catch the Warriors on just like the way the Warriors caught them last year, a little bit hobbled without some key guys, injuries that have plagued them. But if Curry stays this way, everybody is done. Everybody is done. That includes the Spurs Thunder in the next round. That includes whoever they're going to face in the NBA Finals. This team is not going to lose 4 out of 7 if Curry is playing like this. This was a great comeback. I mean, even if he wasn't that great and the Warriors still eked out a victory, you'd still go, oh, okay, well, he got some of the rust off. But the way he dominated the fourth quarter and the way he dominated overtime, this now changes the entire NBA playoffs the way we see it. Because, again, there were a lot of question marks. We were wondering, hey, look, how hurt is he? Because, look, injuries occur, and we always want our guys to go out at a certain percentage. Right, no one is 100%. You know, if you come back from an injury, knee injury or whatnot, you're not expected to come back at 100%. Yeah, there's going to be some. Maybe you're not as quick. Maybe you're a step or two slow. Maybe you don't get the full extension on your jump. Whatever, right? Whatever. But Curry looked vintage Curry in the fourth quarter. And here's the other thing. He looked like a very well-rested Steph Curry at the end of this game, despite 37 minutes. It's like, oh yeah, I haven't been playing for a while, and now I'm really, really fresh. That's very dangerous. Very, very dangerous.
I selfishly wish we could do like the loser of the San Antonio OKC series, them go to the East and play the Cavs.
Yeah, no kidding.
In their finals.
No
kidding. And just have those four teams.
Yeah, I said this earlier tonight. Miami and Toronto is as competitive as a series as we're getting in the NBA. Almost every game into overtime. It is the most. It's the least interesting.
So boring.
The basketball isn't very good.
No.
It's drama because it's drama and close, but it doesn't mean the performance is excellent. And in the end, what are you getting out of this series other than this is the team that's going to get beat down by LeBron James and the Cavaliers because they've got everything clicking? I think Miami could get a game, maybe one other. God, if they got six, I'd be really shocked. Neither one of these teams is a match. The San Antonio Oklahoma City series was interesting because again the Steph Curry question, but now that one's still like, wow, okay, who's gonna have to go up against this Warriors team that's now complete? God, if I'm Steve Kerr, I just walked out of this arena thinking I'm going to be in a 2-2 series if my team doesn't crawl their way back into this. They were outscored 26-18 in the first quarter and came back and had a great third, a good fourth, and an even better overtime. The MVP is back. 40 points in 37 minutes, 5 of 16 from behind the arc. He was it. All right, we'll talk more about that coming up in the next hour, as well as Bryce Harper. Outside of him yelling at an umpire, what did we learn about the way Joe Maddon pitched to him in the series? Is that going to be fun this summer? That's next, Yahoo Sports Radio.